Today's daf is Pesachim Daf Nun Zayin. Today's shir is sponsored by Elisha Graf in honor of the upsharon of the Chernobyler Einikel being celebrated this coming Sunday, and in honor of the appearance of the Chernobyler Rebbe from Baltimore in North Woodmere, in honor of the occasion. So wish a mazel tov to the Chernobyler dynasty for the upsharon, and thank Elisha again very much for the sponsorship. We left off on Daf Nun Vav Amid Beis. We are two lines from the bottom. Tana Rabban, we're at the Brisa. Three topics in today's daf. It's a shortened daf, because you'll notice on Nun Zayin of the Beis, the source of daf has it that the majority of the page is filled up with the Seder Vehilchos Korban Pesach Rishon B'Ketzara, a basic synopsis of the halachos of Korban Pesach. So it leaves room for three topics. First, we're going to continue the discussion of whether vegetables are chayiv in peah, and we're going to identify different opinions about which vegetables may or may not be chayiv. Then the second topic, the Gemara is going to tell two stories about how people made certain items hegdish in order to prevent other people from taking them. As a way, they saw something was happening unfairly, so they just say, you know what, this is hegdish, and that way people wouldn't unfairly take things that they shouldn't. And then the end of the daf, the end of the perek, this is the last daf of the fourth perek of Maseches Pesachim, the end of the perek lists four cries that the Azara cried out about different people who were singled out either for doing something particularly bad or for doing something particularly good. And in that context, we're going to discuss the punishment of the Kohen who used to wrap his hands in cloth as a way of not getting his hands dirty from the Avoda, and what exactly his punishment was in the end. It was a pretty significant punishment. So let's pick up from the Braisa, Tan Rabbanan, two lines from the bottom, Nun Vavan Beis. Tan Rabbanan, Barishona Yunosin Peya Lelefes Lekruv, they used to give Peya, leave peah on the corner of fields or gardens that were growing turnips and cabbage. Rabbi Yossi Omer Aflakaplet. Rabbi Yossi says even leeks, even if they were growing leeks, they would leave peah in that garden as well. Vetanya Idach, another braisa, I mean, this one about the Anshei Yericho. One of the things that Chum were not so happy with the Anshei Yericho about was that they would leave peah in vegetables also, and vegetables are not chayiv in peah. What's so terrible about doing that? So the Aniyim get a little more. They're doing a nice mitzvah of tzedakah. Now the problem is, we're going to see later, the problem is that when something is peah, it's not chayiv in maestros. But if it's not peah, it's chayiv in maestros. So if I want to give tzedakah to an ani, stam, that's not peah, I first have to be mafresh shumas and maestros, then I give tzedakah to the ani. Or tell the ani, I didn't take shumas and maestros, and the ani will have to, but it has to be taken care of. But if it's peah is not chayiv in shumas and maestros, so you're being machshel the aniim in eating tevel. So that's not a good thing. So anyway, which vegetables was it? Lefes the Kara of Rabbi Yossi says even leeks. V'tanya idach, another brisa, hayinosim peah lelefes ulkaflut. No, that they would give peah from turnips and from leeks. And Rabbi Shimon Omer aflukruv. Rabbi Shimon says that cabbage also. So how many different opinions are here? So neima tlasa tanai havu. Maybe we should say that this is three different opinions. You have the Tanakama of Rabbi Yossi who says lelefes ulkruv and not lekaflut. Tanakama of Rabbi Shimon says lelefes ulkaflut and not lekruv. And you have Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, who really hold the same thing, that for all three, that they ended up giving peah from all three. It's just that when the Tanakama listed two of them, so Rabbi Yossi added the third one, and when the Tanakama listed a different two, Rabbi Shimon added the third one, but they really agree with each other. But it turns out that it's as many as three shitos. So it says Gemara, lo, that's not the case. Trei Tanai Havu, v'Tanakama de Rabbi Shimon, hainu Rabbi Yossi. It's really only two shitos. The Tanakama of Rabbi Shimon is Rabbi Yossi, the Tanakama of Rabbi Yossi, hainu Rabbi Shimon. And the Tanakama of Rabbi Yossi is Rabbi Shimon. Umay af, and when each one says, no, they even gave on this vegetable, akamaisa. It's saying that in addition to the first of the two vegetables you mentioned, they also gave on a second vegetable, but not the second one that you mentioned, rather the second one that I'm going to tell you that they gave from. So they were arguing with the Tanakama, but not by adding a third, but by replacing the second with a different second one. And therefore it turns out that there are only two opinions, and the anonymous Tana is revealed by in the other braisa who the anonymous Tana is. Tanu Rabbanan. So the Gemara now tells two stories. Story number one: Ben Bohayan doesn't pay a liyerek. Ben Bohayan gave paya from left paya in his field, in his garden, from vegetables. Uba avivu matzal aniyim shayutunin yerek. And his father came and he saw the aniyim walking out of the field holding all these vegetables. Va'omdin al pesach hagina. They were right by the entrance of the gina of the garden. Amalehem banai shlichu me'alechem vani nosin lechem keflayim b'musar. He said, do me a favor, drop what you have. Don't take the paya with you. Don't take those vegetables with you. I'll give you twice as much of whatever you have. I'll give you twice as much in non-tevel produce, in produce that already has maestros taken off from it. And you should know, lo mipnei she'enai tzara. I'm not saying this because I'm being stingy and I don't want to give you. It's just that I'm worried because the chachamim say you're not supposed to leave paya from yerek, so you really shouldn't have this. This is not supposed to be paya. So what was that last line about? Why does he have to explain to them that he's not being stingy? Typically, it's understood that you're not being stingy when you're offering double of what the person has. That seems to be fairly generous. So what kind of explanation is he giving? So he's saying, no, he doesn't want them to think that, wait a second, this is too good to be true. He's probably not really going to give it to us. He's saying, oh, if you just give me your social security number and your bank account number, I'm going to send you $1 million. They're probably not going to ever see that $1 million. So he didn't want them to think that way. So he explained to them why he was giving them a deal that's too good to be true, because he was very concerned religiously that they shouldn't be eating tevel. Instead, he was going to offer them something much better. The Chasam Sofer asks a simple question. If he wanted to avoid the problem of them eating tevel, why does he have to tell them, get rid of whatever you took and I'll give you double? He should have told them to take maestros from the Irakos, and whatever you lose by giving maestros, I'll replace it. That I'll give you. But why does he have to give them double of whatever they have? He could have just solved the problem much easier by allowing them to do the mitzvah of being mafresh shumas and maestros, and he would replace whatever they have. So he says he was afraid that that if he would do that, they were going to make the mistake and think that it's a chiyuv to do that way. That it's a chiyuv that whoever owns the field has to cover the maestros of the payah that you leave in Yerek. So they're going to think that all of that is part of the process. Says the Chasam Sofer, whenever you see a minhag ta'us, there's not necessarily any chiyuv to be mevatel a minhag ta'us, but there is an obligation to see to it that a minhag ta'us doesn't begin. So that much responsibility does have. If he thought that this was going to lead to a minhag ta'us, where people were going to mistakenly think that this is the din, so he was responsible to make sure that that doesn't happen. And the Chasam Sofer adds that maybe he didn't tell them, maybe he told them, lo mimnei she'enai tzara, so that they're not choshed him, that he wants to become wealthy, meaning what kind of stinginess? Chasam Sofer says an interesting vart. When it comes to the mitzvah of giving maestros, aser b'shvil shetis asher, we darshan from the double terminology of aser tis asher, that aser b'shvil shetis asher, that when a person gives maestros, it's a skula to become very wealthy. So he's telling them, I'm not telling you this because I want the skula of ashirus, that I'm trying to be stingy, that I want to be able to have that mitzvah to get the skula. I'm telling you this because I don't want you to violate the Avera. So that's an additional explanation of why this explanation was required. Also, I mentioned before, Rashi explains the reason that it's usher to leave peah in a vegetable garden is because the aniyim are going to violate the iser of tevel. As we explained, that the peah is pater from meiser, because by meiser, why is peah taka pater from meiser? Because by meiser it says uba halevi kiem lo chelik v'nachleimach, that who do you give meiser to, or where do you give meiser from? When you give to the levi who doesn't have any chelik v'nachla, so you give him meiser, that should be his chelik v'nachla. But from peah, the levi does have a chelik v'nachla, because from peah is for all aniyim, and we don't keep levim who are aniyim out of peah. They get to have peah also. So he does have a chelik v'nachla, and that's why there's no chiyuv maestros from peah. So because he has a zuchus in that field, so we have to be choshesh that the aniyim are going to take peah from stei yerek, and they're not going to know that it's chayv maestros, so they're going to eat it without taking maestros properly. So anyway, that's what Rashi says on the Mishnah, how on nun vav amar aleph. However, Rashi over here says that that he simply doesn't want the Levim to lose out. That the concern is not a concern that, oh, it's not going to have Maestros and therefore you're going to be violating the Yisrael Tevel. No, the concern is that it's Chayv and Maestros and you're stealing from the Levim. The Levim are supposed to get their Maestros, they're not going to get their Maestros. Now, which is worse? L'chara, the Yisrael Tevel, is a worse Yisrael than the Yisrael of withholding Maestros from Levim, which is it's a Dina Mamunas issue, but it's not Dina Mamunas against any particular person, it's against the entire Shevet Leviya. So, the entire group of Levim. But anyway, why does Rashi even change his pshat from the Mishnah to over here? So the Marsha is bothered by this. It's not necessarily a stira, because they're both a problem, meaning it's when you don't give Maisos, you're violating both things. You're violating the issue of Tevel, and also the issue of keeping something away from a Levi. So it wouldn't necessarily be a stira, but the Marsha is bothered by this. So the Tzlach suggests the following possibility. He says, Rashi over here means that is Mitzad Hefsad Levim, like he sounds like, and I mean the Marsha tries to fetch it out that he's saying the same thing in both places. The Tzlach says, no, he's not saying the same thing in both places, but it's still not a stira to where Rashi says earlier, because Rashi holds the reason that the Chum said that you don't give pay al Yarek is because the Aniyim are going to be Nichshal Nisr of Tevel. And it's only over here, by the story of Ben Bohayan, where Rashi says that it's only because of the Hefsad Levim, because over here, to say the reason of Tevel wouldn't work. Why? Because it seems that this field belonged to Bohayan, the father, and his son was not able to give it b'matano or to be mafkir without the reshus of the father. So when he left Peah, it was b'taus. The son thought that it was chayiv in Peah. But since the truth is that it's not chayiv in Peah, the Peah remains in the reshus of the father, and the Aniyim never really took possession of it. They never became the rightful owners of it. So Mela, it's difficult. Why wasn't Bohayan just mafkirit, and then it would be pater from Meiser? Meaning it's still in his possession, so the father, if he wanted it to be pater from Meiser, simply could have been mafkir the field, and it would have avoided the whole Tevel issue, right? By just being mafkir the field. So says the Tzlach, why didn't he want to do that? Because he wanted Levim to get 10% of whatever he has in his field. He didn't want to be mafkirit and avoid the Chiv Meiser. He wanted the Chiv Meiser to take place. So that's why over here, Dafka, it says the concern is not a Tevel concern. There was another way around the Tevel concern, and that's that really leads directly into what the Tosos, Balei Tosos ask in Maseches Nedarim is, wait a second, why do you have to say let's leave that out for now, but meaning the idea of just being mafkirid and you could avoid the entire Chiyuv Tevel in that way is certainly something that could have been done. The Tosos does ask over here. Tosos over here raises the question that since at the end of the day the Baal HaBayis left Peah, so he was mafkir that Yerek La'aniyim, meaning, granted, you're not supposed to leave Peah from vegetables, right? But if you're mafkir Peah, if you're mafkir anything, it's not chayv maisos. When the Baal HaBayis leaves Peah, so what's he doing? He's saying, I don't want it, let the aniyim come and take it. So essentially, he's really being mafkir it. So isn't it not chayv in maisos anyway? Because he's being mafkir it? When he leaves it as Peah, isn't that a form of hefker? That's Tosos' kasha. So Tosos gives two terutzim. First of all, Tosos says, maybe our sugi assumes like the shita of Beis Hillel. What's the definition of hefker? Is hefker when I say that I no longer want to be the owner of something, and therefore a particular group can come and take it? Is that enough to be called hefker? Let's say I only make it hefker for people who are tall or short or fat or skinny. I take a particular subgroup of the population and say it's hefker klape them, that they're allowed to take it. Not a particular individual, but a group of people. Is that hefker? Does hefker have to mean that I'm completely being misalik from it, that I take away any rights to even determine who the next owner could possibly be? So that's a machlokas of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. It could be that our sugi is assuming like the Beis Hillel, that a hefker that's only la'aniyim and not la'ashirim is not called hefker. So when he declares that corner of his field peah, what's he saying? He's not saying it's hefker. He's saying it's hefker la'aniyim. It's only hefker for aniyim to come and take, because only aniyim are allowed to take peah. So if that's the case, that it's not called hefker, male, it's not going to be mafkiyah midei maestros. It's still going to be chayiv and maestros. So then maybe our Gemara is assuming that way. That's why it's not hefker. Also, Tosa says that maybe even Beis Shammai would agree over here that this would not be considered hefker. Because why does a person leaving Peah in his vegetable garden? Because he thinks he's chayiv to leave Peah in his vegetable garden. It's not true, though. He's not chayiv. And therefore, it's a hefker b'taos. A hefker b'taos. You make something hefker because of a mistaken premise. Maybe that's not hefker. Even Beis Shammai would be moda in that case, that it would not be considered hefker. Okay, that was the first story. Says the Gemara Vayter, second story. Tan Rabbanan. Barishono yimanichon oros kachim b'lishchas beis haparva. They used to leave the oros of kachim, the hides of kachim animals, in the lishchas beis haparva, the beis haparva room in the beis hamikdash. How does a room get the name beis haparva? So different shitos in Rishonim. Rashi Maseches Yuman Daf Lamed Hey says it was called Beis HaParva because there was a certain Mechashev who built it and his name was Parva. So it was after the builder that they called it Beis HaParva. Tosfos Maseches Yuman says in the name of the Aruch that some of the Chacham explained that Parva was a guy who dug a tunnel through the Beis HaMikdash in an effort to try to see the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol, and they caught him right around that area of the Beis HaMikdash. So in the place where they caught him tunneling through, right around that area, they called it after his name. They called it Beis HaParva to remind people of this wild story of this fellow who was so interested in seeing the Avodah, the Kohen Gadol. The Rambam says a little bit like that also in the Perush Mishnayos, that he was Chata the Azara. He dug through the Azara from this Lishcha to be able to see the Avodah, and they killed him, and they called it Beis HaParva after him, I guess, to teach everybody a lesson that don't play any games over here. You're not allowed to tunnel through to try to get in to see the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. It's hard to imagine how a guy thought he wouldn't get caught. I don't know, digging through, excavating under the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, but anyway, the third possibility is the Yantav Maseches Midos quotes from the Rash that it's called Beis HaParva because of the Oros HaParim, that they would what did they do in that room? That was a room in the northern part of the Azara where they would salt the hides of the animals. That's why our Gemara talks about the hides that were in the Beis HaParva. So since there were parim, so parva is Milashon parim. So anyway, so they used to leave the Oros Kachim in the Lishkas Beis HaParva, and La'erev HaYimachalkanos Alanshe Beis Av, the family that was working of Kohanim, that was working in the Beis HaMikdash that day, would divide it up. The Oros go to the Kohanim, so they would divide up who gets which Oros in that in the evening. But how does it work when people start dividing things up amongst themselves, and they're just left to fend for themselves to decide who gets what? The strongest of the group, it was called Olam Gavar, the strongest of the family, would end up taking everything. They'd get an unfair share of it. So they decided instead to divide it up every week on Erev Shabbos. So the entire Mishmar wouldn't just be the base Av. The Mishmaros would come and they would take together with each other. So too many people for a couple of Bali Israels. But still, the Gedolei Kohuna, the leaders of the Mishmar, the people who were most chashuv, would end up taking everything and would leave the others without much to take. So Amdu Bailim v'Kedishim L'Shamayim. So the Bailim got up and decided that they're going to make all the Oros Hegdish. They're going to make it Hegdish, and therefore people won't be able to bring it for themselves anymore. So how does that happen? How do they make it Hegdish? So Rashi says the Kohani HaMishmaros all were Makdish together. But wait a second. What does it mean they were all Makdish together? It sounds like it was a one-time Takana, that all the Kohanim got together and they decided they're going to be Makdish all of the Oros and the future Oros that are going to be brought from, that are going to be taken from all the Karbanos. But l'chora, that doesn't work, because that's a davar shelo b'liyolam. You can only be maktish something that's already here. But they're being maktish oros of animals that weren't even born yet. Animals that certainly weren't brought to the Beis HaMikdash yet. How could they do that? That's a davar shelo b'liyolam. So there's a kasha several of the Rishonim ask. So the Maram Chalava explains that even though they were not boli de kohanim, but lev bezin masna aleim, that such a takana, you could say that the bezin has the right to make such a takana, that it's lev bezin Masalin, that it's a tanai in every hegdish. Any time a bailam wants to be makdish's animal, a tanai in the hegdish is that the oros. So that's what it means. The Kohanim got together, not midine the bailam of those karbanos, but midine bezdin. That as a din of bezdin, they got together and they said that a tanai built into every hegdish of every animal is now going to be that it's going to that the oros are going to go l'shamayim. Okay, the others say some of the achronim suggest maybe it was more practical. Maybe the the way they did it was they made an agreement that every Kohen had an obligation at the time of the Hefshei Tahar, at the time that they skinned the animal, to be Makdish, the Yor of the animal, Lekache, but the Kabayis, that's what they would do. That was their agreement. Not that this was a one-time statement of Hegdish. It was an agreement to be Makdish every single time in the future that the Or would actually come. So Amru lo hayam watim at shechifu zehechal kulo b'tavlo shel zahav. They had so much money from the oros of the various behemos that it didn't take very long for them to be able to afford to line the entire heichal with golden tiles. Shein ama al ama, each golden tile was one ama by one ama, ka'ove dinar zahav. And it was the thickness of a dinar zahav. You can imagine how heavy that must have been. But they would line the, they lined the entire heichal with these golden tiles. Ule regel, and on yom tovim, hayu mekaplen osan, they would fold them up, and they would leave it on a high place on the Harabayis, on a step on the Harabayis, so that the Oli Regalim would be able to see that they were so beautiful and that there was no flaws. These were flawless tiles, they were the most beautiful tiles, so that they could see the great grandeur and the kavod of the Beis Hamikdash. There was a lot of pomp and circumstance that they would try to show off. That's what the Gemara says. They would hold up the Lechem Apanim, they would hold up for the Oli Regalim and squeeze it to show the great miracles of the Beis Hamikdash. This was a show. People from the that were coming to be Ole Regel needed to be inspired, and they would show them the beauty and the majesty of the Beis Hamikdash. So this was one of the things that they would do for the Ole Regel. So Hashem is just medayik. It doesn't say lo hayam merubim. It says lo hayam muatim. So he says lo hayam muatim means that they were makdish the oros. It didn't take very long till they were. It took very very short to, a short period of time. And l'chora, even after that short period of time, they were still being makdish the oros. So what happened to the money after that? So Mistama, something happened to the money. They must have figured out what something else to do with the money after that, but it didn't take very long for the money to be used for to buy all this gold. Well, what's the motivation in saying such a diuk? So the Rambam in Maisar Kabanos, Parak Hey, Halach Chaf, the Rambam says that what would they do with the oros? They would be mechalik in Me'erev Shabbos la'erev Shabbos. They would divide it up amongst the whole Mishmar instead of each base av every day taking the oros. So what, the Rambam didn't have the end of the story? The Gemara had three steps. That first, what would they do with the oros? They divide it every day. That wasn't working, so second step was Erev Shabbos, Erev Shabbos. That wasn't working, so they just decided to be Matish, and they were, and then they went to bed the Kabayis. So how does the Rambam skip the third step? So says Hashem, maybe that's what the Rambam's saying, that the third step was, they didn't have anything to do with the money anymore. They it was lo hayam watim. It happened very quickly. They lined the entire Heichal with gold, and they just didn't need, they were turning away the donations. They didn't need the money anymore. So they decided to go back to the old system, the second step, which was slightly better than the first system of being the Erev Shabbos, of Shabbos, of dividing it up every week. Tana, Abishol Omer. Abishol says the following. Korosh al Shikma Hayu B'Yericho. So we mentioned that there were these, that when the Anshei Yericho argued with the Chachamim about the growth of branches on trees that were Hegdish. So why were these trees Hegdish in the first place? So the Gemara explains. There were these beams of Shikma Hayu B'Yericho Vayu Bali Zros Not Lassam Bezroa. And people who were strong men were coming and taking it forcefully. They were taking it unfairly. So Amdu Bailim Victishim L'Shamayim. So the Bailim said, you know, we're not getting it anyway. Might as well be Makdish L'Shamayim. Maybe the Bali Zros will have a little more respect for the property of Hegdish than they have for our own property. We'd rather Hegdish get it than we, than the Bali Zros getting it. Aleim Vel Kiyotz B'Yamomar Abishol Ben Batnus Mishum Abiyosef Ben Chanin. About these kinds of people who would take all these sorts of things that didn't belong to them or that they weren't really entitled to. So Abishol Ben Batnus or Abiyosef says the name of Abiyosef Ben Chanin. Oili mi base baitus, oili me alasan. Woe unto me from the base baitus and from their sticks that they would go and beat everybody up with to be able to take what they wanted. Oili mi base chanin, oili mi lechishasan. Woe unto me from the base chanin. And what was the trick of the base chanin? What would they do? They would speak lashon hara. They would say all sorts of terrible things. Oili mi base katrus, oili mi kulmusan. And the base katrus and their weapon of getting back at people was using the pen, was by writing all sorts of terrible things or things that would get people in trouble. Oili mi base Yishmael ben Piachi, oili mi agrofan, and woe unto me from base Yishmael ben Piachi and from their strength, from their might. Shehim kohanim gedolim ibneim gizbarim. They are the kohanim gedolim. Their sons are the treasurers. There was terrible nepotism. The chasaneim and their sons-in-law Amrachlin were the auditors. Vavdei and chovtin asam. Haman v'Machalos, and their servants would beat up everybody with sticks. So the Marsha just points out that, what did we say? The first of the four was based by Itzos, and we said, Oili mei alasan. And Rashi says alasan means their sticks. And then the fourth group, we talk about their Avdeim Chavtin Asam b'Machalos. How come the word for sticks changed from alasan to Machalos, mamish, in the same sentence that we're talking about? It's one sentence, and we have two different words for sticks. So the Marsha says he doesn't think that alasan means their sticks. Says the Marsha, what's going on over here is that these four groups are correspond to the four that are in a Makablos Pnei Shechina. That the Gemara tells us in Maseches Sota that there are four groups of people that are not Makabel Pnei Shechina, and we're dafka pointing out the Kohanim who are supposed to be Makabel Pnei Shechina, they expressed these midos, or they demonstrated these midos of those who are not going to be Zocha to be Makabel Pnei Shechina. Who are the four groups that are not Makabel Pnei Shechina? Kas Leitzim, Kas Chanafim, Kas Shakarim, Kas Mesaprei, Lashon Hara. That's Sota Daf Mem Beis. Now, it also does say Al Gasei Haruach, for people who are Balei Gaiva, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not able to live in the same world with Gasei Haruach, but it doesn't mention a fifth group over here of Gasei Haruach, because all of them were Gasei Haruach. So says the Marsha, this is how you read the Gemara. Oili mi beis baitus, when we identify each group by name, we're saying that they're Gasei Haruach. By calling them out by name, that itself is saying that each of them are Balei Gaiva. Oili me alasan, he says, Allah is the lashon of Allah v'shua, that they were nishba l'sheker, so that's keneged kas shakarim, the liars. Oili mi beis chanin, again, gasei haruach. Oili mi l'chishasan, l'chishasan is that they spoke lashon hara, that's keneged the kas misapre lashon hara. Oili mi beis katrus, again, pointing them out by name for their gaiva. Oili mi kulmosan, they would write all sorts of leitzanos and tzchok on other people, and that's keneged the kas of leitzanim. Oili mi beis Yishmael ben Piachi, again, gaiva. Oili mi agropan, they were chanafim. That's connected the kas of chanafim, of false flattery. That's what the Gemara uses, that expression of agrofa, when it talks about chanifa. It says, miyom shegavar agrofa shel chanufa nisavu hadinim, the Gemara says in Sota. So that we see that terminology is used dafka by chanufa. So then it says they were all gasei haruach, and that's why they had their all this terrible nepotism going on, and they would beat people up. So that was the idea, that it relates to those four groups of people. Tanu Rabbanan, second wide line on Nun Zayin Amalav. Tanu Rabbanan, Arba Tzvacha Tzavcha Azara. There are four cries that the Azara cried out. Cry number one, Rishona, Tzu'umi kan b'nei Eli, Shetimu Heichal Hashem. The first cry was to get rid of the b'nei Eli, get the b'nei Eli out of the Beis HaMikdash. They were metameh the Heichal Hashem. So Rashi points out, what does it mean they were metameh Heichal Hashem? Well, it says in Shmuel Aleph, in the second paragraph of Shmuel Aleph, Eli zaken ma'od, Shamas kol asher yasun banav l'kol Yisrael. He heard what his children were doing to the Jewish people. Ve'es asher yishkuvun es hanashim atzvoz Pesach ol moed. That they were sleeping with all sorts of women in the Pesach ol. So it sounds literally that they were metame, Heichal Hashem. They were sleeping with these women in the Heichal Hashem. So the Be'er Sheva points out, it sounds like Rashi's taking it literally over here, which is beferish against the Gemara and Shabbos. The Gemara and Shabbos, Daf Nun Hei, tells us that Kol Omer B'nei Eli Chatu, Einu Ela Toa. Anyone who says that the B'nei Eli sinned, it doesn't mean that, of course, they sinned, but I mean anyone who says that they sinned with this sin, the sin that the Navi says they sinned, is mistaken. The Navi was speaking in very strong terminology about a sin that wasn't quite as terrible as it sounds. It was pretty bad, but it wasn't quite as terrible as the Navi seems to describe it. What was their sin? The Gemara says that there were Yoldos and Zavos that were bringing their Karbanos, because they were Tameh and they needed to bring their Karban in order to become Taharos and in order to become Mutaros L'Bailehem, and they would delay and bring their Karbanos. They would keep them around an extra day or two because they said they were tired. They weren't interested in bringing all these Karbanos so quickly. So they were taking their sweet time in bringing their Karbanos, and in so doing, they were keeping these Yoldos and Zavos longer than they should have away from their husbands. So that extra day or two that they were keeping them away from their husbands, it's ki'ilu they were shochev with the Nashim. But it wasn't that they were literally shochev with the Nashim. So it sounds like Rashi over here says the Be'er Sheva, saying differently than the Gemara and Shabbos. Marshon, the Chiddush HaGadlus, and the Aruch Lener say, no, Rashi is also, he's just quoting the Pasuk, but he knows that the way you're supposed to touch up the Pasuk is the way it says in Shabbos. But anyway, that's called Timoy Echal Hashem. The Chazal picked up from where the Navi left off, that the Navi used this strong terminology to describe this idea of delaying the Kabbalos. So Chazal called it Timoy Echal Hashem, even though it wasn't literally Timoy Echal Hashem. They also borrowed that terminology from the Navi. Second cry that the Azara has, Va'od Savcha, Tsemi Kan Yisachar Ish Kfar Barkai, get out of here, Yisachar Ish Kfar Barkai, Shemechavid Es Atzmo, Umechal El Kodshe Shemayim. That he honors himself and he degrades the Kodshe Shemayim. What did he do so terrible? Davakorech Yadi B'Shirai Va'avid Avoda. He would wrap his hands in cloth and do the Avoda with his hands all wrapped up in cloth. So Rashi points out two problems with that. Meaning two problems with this action of wrapping one's hands in cloth when doing the Avoda. Problem number one, it's a chatzitza that would passel the Avoda. You're not allowed to have anything in between the hands of the Kohen and that which he is doing the Avoda with. Torah says, V'lokach ha-Kohen, it has to be l'kicha with his yadayim directly, so chatzitza would passel the Avoda. And second of all, it's a bizayin to the kachim. It's as if he's saying, I don't want to get my hands dirty with kachim. He's too dignified to get his hands dirty with kachim. So l'chora, the Be'er Sheva points out, l'chora, there should be a third problem over here, and that's yisur begadim. The Kohen is supposed to wear a shemona big day kuna. He's not allowed to wear any other big day kuna, so it's l'chora, a problem of yisur begadim. But the Be'er Sheva points out that it's only a problem of yisur begadim if he's doing the avoda. If he was mechal the avoda ready with chatzitza, because it's chatzitza, so then it's not going to be a problem of yisur begadim. So man of shach, it's either one or the other. It's either a chatzitza or it's yisur begadim. So once it's chatzitza, it's not going to be a problem of yisur begadim anymore. Tosos raises a question in Maseches Sukkah. The Gemara in Sukkah says that someone who would take his lulav al yidei davar acher, meaning he would hold something else to hold his lulav with, that still yotzi the mitzvah of netilas lulav. So Tosos raises the question: why by kachim is it a problem of chatzitza? It's not considered that you're doing the avoda properly. It's a chatzitza in the avoda, but when it comes to lulav with netilas lulav, you're holding l'kicha al yidei davar acher shma l'kicha. Holding it using something else is called holding. It's so Tosfos in Sukkah on Daf Lam Zayin Amud Aleph is Metarit that over there the cloth is actually helping you hold the lulav. It's something that you would wrap around the lulav to make it easier for the lulav to hold. That's not going to be a chatzitza. Over here, the cloth is around your hand. It doesn't help you hold the lulav; it just helps you protect your own hands. That is a chatzitza. Tosfos in Yuma says in the name of the Ritzbah that by klisharis, even if it's only helping you to carry the klisharis, it's still not called a lekicha because by the avodas hakohen. It's not just v'lakach, it's v'lakach ha-kohen, that there can't be anything different, anything interposing between the kohen and that which he is taking. Whereas by l'kich, by lulav, it's a l'kach tam l'chem that you should take, but it's not the emphasis is not on the person, and therefore as long as it's aiding in the carrying, that's going to be okay. Tosfos in Sukkah is also metaret. Tosfos over here discusses also this stirut, right? You see the bottom Tosfos over here, the last Tosfos in the parak, also discusses this stirut. But Tosfos in Sukkah adds another teret, that which it's l'kicha the davar acher shma l'kicha is only when it's derech kavod. What would they do? They would take the lulav with the davar acher to decorate the lulav, to make the lulav look nicer, to make it look pretty, derech kavod. But over here it wasn't kavod of the mitzvah that he was doing. He was doing kavod of himself. He was doing it for his own honor. He wasn't doing it for the kavod of the mitzvah. The Aruch HaNer just raises the question, good, so he was doing this terrible thing. Every time he was doing the avod, he was wrapping his hands in this cloth because he didn't want to get his hands dirty with the kachim. There were no other Kohanim to tell him to cut it out. No other Kohanim to tell him to stop doing this, that this is a terrible bizayin. They just let him live and let live, and they just let him do what he did. How could they not stop him? So says the Aruch HaNer, if you say like that last Teretz and Tosfos, that it all depends. If you're doing it, l'kavod the mitzvah, and l'kavod the kachim, saying, wonderful, that's like by the lulav, where they're dressing up the lulav, they're making it l'kavod the mitzvah. So then that's perfectly fine. But if you're doing it, l'kavod yourself, then it's a bizayin to the kachim, and then it's going to be a chatzitza. So it all really depends on kavani. You could have two people doing exactly the same thing, and one of them is doing a mitzvah, and the other one is doing an avera, all based on the kavana. So the other kohanim are down the kafskos, they see that he's wearing this cloth around his hand, so they assume the best. Why should they assume that he's doing it l'kavod atzmo? But Kadosh Baruch Hu knew what the score was. He knew what he was doing. So in general, is there a problem? Is this only didn't catch him, or is there a problem in mitzvahs to wear gloves? A shochet, let's say, wants to wear gloves, doesn't want to get his hands dirty when he shechts. Probably should find a different business if he doesn't want to get dirty from blood. But a shochet wants to wear gloves for shechita. Is he allowed to wear gloves to do the shechita? A moel. You see more and more moelim now that wear surgical gloves. So is that okay? Are you allowed to wear you allowed to wear gloves? Is that a violation? So Rav Moshe, I didn't see any tshuvas about a moel, but Rav Moshe discusses by a shochet in Yardei Chelk Beis Siman Tes Zayin, and he says that based on the Gemara in Sukkah that they would be korich sudar and nil to the lulav, and they were yotze, and that's considered derech kavod. That it was only in our Gemara where so Rav Moshe quotes the Tosos that. And it's only by that there's a difference between the lulav for some reason and the kachim. So Rav Moshe suggests the difference is that kachim is a bizayin because it's kachay shemayim. That dafka kachim has this additional level of kedusha where it's a bizayin to wrap your hands in something. But when you're not dealing with kachim, you're dealing with a mitzvah, so then it's okay. So basar chulin, you're just stabbed in a shech basar taiva. So yeah, it may be a mitzvah to do shchita, but it's not kachim. So Rav Moshe thought that it was okay, it's not a problem to shech wearing gloves. Not all the poskim were so convinced. Deborah Tzina Rav in his Shuvas Bar Moshe thinks it's a problem that the shochtim should not be wearing gloves at the time that they shecht. Also, the Pischei Tshuva says, what about when you're writing a Sefer Torah? A guy doesn't want to get ink on his hands, or his hands are freezing cold and he's losing feeling in his hands, so he wants to wear gloves when he's writing a Sefer Torah. Pischei Tshuva in Yardaya in Siman Reish Ayin Aleph says that one should not write a Sefer Torah, even just the tagin on top of the letters while he's wearing gloves, and even if it's very cold, and even if the tips of the gloves are cut off, the fingertips of the gloves are cut off, because it's a lack of covet for the Sefer Torah. So he says there's no raya ledavar, but zecha ledavar from our sugya, that a person should avoid wearing gloves when dealing with something that has such a level of kedusha. There's a discussion in the poskim also about wearing a ring when you take a lulav. Some people, women certainly, wear rings all the time, and men wear a wedding band or something. Is it a chatzitza when you take the lulav to wear a wedding ring? So the Levush says that the reason that it's not a chatzitza is because it's derech kavod. He says that's like the Gemara says in Sukkah, that netila lidei davar acher, as long as it, and Bali Atos say as long as it's derech kavod, that's good. But many of the other achronim point out that that's a very shver of art. No, what did Tosos say? That it's derech kavod for the mitzvah, that you're trying to dress up the lulav, you're trying to show kavod to the lulav. When you wear your ring, you're not showing kavod to the lulav. That's your own decoration for your own body, that's for your own self. That's not kavod to the lulav. That l'chora would seem to be much more like this. So unless you say that the difference is that the ring is so tiny that it wouldn't constitute a chatzitza, maybe not holding by the spot of the ring. So that's what the poskim discuss, whether one should wear a ring whether one may wear a ring when taking lulav. Poskim also discuss wearing gloves when you're davin. So the Bach is very against it. He says even if it's freezing cold outside, you shouldn't wear gloves when you daven. It's a bizayin. That's not the way you stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu wearing gloves when you daven. So Rav Shlomo Zalman points out that he must have been talking about gloves that are not so evident that you're wearing them because you're freezing, meaning like surgical gloves. Don't wear surgical gloves when you're davening, but to wear gloves that are made out of wool or something when it's you're in, it's 20 degrees below zero in Russia or whatever. So that's that is not a problem. Rav Shlomo Zalman thinks, and Elisha Shlomo says that it's obviously the kind of gloves that would reflect Bizayin. Otherwise, stama, it's like wearing a coat when you're freezing outside. Okay, third thing that the Azara cried about. Va'od savcha Azara, su'sham rasheicha mi'ikanis Yishmael ben Pi'achi, talmido shel Pinchas, v'yishamish bekuna gedola. Let Yishmael ben Pi'achi, the talmud of Pinchas, come in and be mishamish bekuna gedola. That was the third cry of the Azara to allow him to become the Kohen Gadol. Va'od savcha Azara, su'sham rasheicha mi'ikanis Yochanan ben Narboi, Talmido shel Pankai, v'yimali kreso mikachi shemayim. Let Yochanan ben Narboi, the Talmud of Pankai, come in and fill his stomach with kachi shemayim. What was so special about his stomach that he should fill? That's the expression we use when we describe someone becoming a Kohen Gadol. Let him fill his stomach with kachi shemayim. Yeah, Amro leval Yochanan ben Narboi, shaya ochel gimel meos hagolim. Because you know what he would eat in a day? He would have 300 calves, v'shosa gimel meos garbe yayin, and drink 300 jugs of wine, and he would have 40 sa of birds, that was just dessert. And therefore, because he was an eating champion, there was never any nosar in the Beis HaMikdash. There was never any leftover karbonos beyond this man, so he avoided all nosar problems. He was like a human garbage can. He was able to consume everything. So that was his skill. Tos Yishanim and Yuma ask, why doesn't it mention him? The Gemara in Yuma goes through the list of all the Kohanim who were tzaddikim that were Meshamish b'Bayis Sheni. All the Kohanim Gedolim that were tzaddikim during Bayis Sheni. There weren't that many. It's easier to go through the list of the Kohanim Gedolim that were tzaddikim than the list of the Rishayim that were Kohanim Gedolim. So the Gemara is trying to emphasize how many years there were where the Kohanim Gedolim were not tzaddikim. But why isn't he on the list? This is something the Azara cried out about, that he should become the Kohen Gadol. So he said maybe he didn't last that long, and therefore there was and we're only trying to, the whole point of the Gemara is to emphasize how many years it was that we had Kohanim that were tzaddikim. So maybe that's why. The Marsha also asks this question. He says no, maybe he is on the list. Maybe this is Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who spent 80 years as the Kohen Gadol, the exact opposite. Not that he didn't last that long, he lasted 80 years as the Kohen Gadol, and then at the end of his life became a tzduki. That's the story in the Gemara and Brachos and Daf Chav Tes. So he says that's why it says that he was Talmido Shel Pankai. Who in the world is Pankai? He says nobody was Pankai. Pankai is probably Pinchas, but we don't want to mention him by name because we don't want to mention the Rebbe of the person who became a Tzaduki by name. We don't want to embarrass him. So probably that's who it was, says the Marsha. That's who. So he would really consume this amount of food. That's pretty wild. So the Aruch Liner in so Rashi over here says that he wouldn't eat it himself. It means that he had so many people that he would support. He had such a large family that amount of food would get consumed in his house every day. It doesn't mean that he would eat all that food. The Aruch Liner is bothered by that, though. Then why does it say Shaya Ochel? It should be B'lashon Rabim, not Ochel B'lashon Yachid. Also, why would the Azara cry out that let him fill his stomach from Kadshei Shemayim? It's not his stomach, it's everybody's stomach from Kadshei Shemayim. And if there were so many Bnei Beiso that were eating with him, so then it's not such a great Chiddush that there was no Nosar. So what's the big deal? It's not that he ate that much. Everyone was participating. So he says, no, he would eat it all on his own. But it wasn't describing what he would eat in a day, it was describing what he would eat in a year. And it's being literal, that he would eat a full calf every single day. He would eat that amount of meat every single day. That's how the Aruch Liner says. Pashas like Rashi, that it's either you say it's a guzma, or it's like Rashi, that he would support so many people, or both. He would support so many people, and it's a guzma. So anyway, my salka baby Yisachar Ish Kfar Bar Kai, whatever happened to this fellow, Yisachar Ish Kfar Bar Kai, the fellow who would wrap his hands in the cloth. So Amri Malko Malchzav Yasv. One day the king and the queen were sitting and they were debating. What a king and queen debate. I guess they had nothing better to talk about. So Malka Amar Gadya Ya'i. The king was saying that a gedi, that a goat, is a better meat than the meat from a lamb. Umalchsa Amra Imra Ya'i. He says, no, I love lamb chops. Lamb is better meat than goat meat. So Amruman Muchach. So I said, who's going to know the answer to this question? Whether goat meat is better than lamb meat, or lamb meat is better than goat meat? So they said, Kohen Gadol, the Kamasa Karbanos Kol Yama. Who's going to know better than the Kohen Gadol? He's the one that brings Karbanos every single day. Ben Yoyada says, what, they didn't have a butcher in the palace? They had to, only the Kohen Gadol, he's the only butcher around that's going to know the answer to this question? So he says, no, the point is that the Kohen Gadol was dealing with the, on a whole, they said, the Ben Yoyada says, they agreed that lamb chops are better, that lamb meat is better. The machlokas was, do you ever find goat meat that's better than lamb meat? Do you ever find, if someone finds the choicest goat, so who's going to know whether the choicest goats are better than lambs? That the Kohen Gadol would know, because what do people do if they find a really geshmaka animal, if they find a really beautiful animal? They're makdish l'shamayim, that they'll bring as a korban. So someone who has experience with not just stam goats and sheep, but someone with the best of the best, that's who they wanted to go to. So they said the Kohen Gadol, he brings korbanos every day. So asa ihu, so they, okay, he was summoned to the palace. You can imagine what must have been going through his mind, that he's being summoned to the palace to give some sort of major decision. And they said, yeah, we were just arguing what's better, sheep or goat. So naturally, achvi biyade, igadiya yasik l'tmida. So he like brushed him off. He made a gesture with his hands, like, oh my gosh, you brought me for this? And he said, you know what, if the gedi were really better, then we would bring the gedi as a karmat tamid. But guess what? We don't. We bring a lamb as a karmat tamid. So I guess a lamb is better. So Amar Malka, the king said, he didn't have the aim of the malchus. How does he gesture toward me like that? We should cut off his right hand for making such a gesture. Yeah, now, really, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was pulling the strings that his right hand was being cut off because he would do the avoda with his right hand wrapped in cloth. But he was megalgal adavar that it would come out this way through the gzeira of the king. He gave a bribe, though, to the king's executioner or whatever, the person who was supposed to cut off his hand to cut off his left hand instead. He wanted to keep his right hand. Shama Malko Paskali Amine. But then the king heard about the bribe and the fact that only his left hand was cut off, and he made him cut off his right hand also. So it ended up that both of his hands were cut off. Amr of Yosef Brich Rachmana da Ashkali Sakhar Ishkfar Barkai Limitraf Semine Bahai Alma. That the Ribbon Shalom was so kind to him that he punished him in this world. Amr of Ashi Yisachar Ishkfar Barkai Lotana Masnisin. That Yisachar Ishkfar Barkai must have, by giving that answer, that it's so obvious that a lamb is better, he must have not learned Mishnayis, the Tanan. It says in Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Omer Kvasim Kodman Leizim Bekal Makam, that a keves comes before an aze. Yachl Mimneshu Muvcharin Biminon. The Mishnah says you might think that the keves comes before the aze because it's Muvchar, because it's better, the meat of the keves is better. Tamal Omer, Im Keves Yavi Karbono, Melamit Sheshnei Shkulin Kecha. That's why it says Im Keves Yavi Karbono, to tell us that they're really the same. That even though we're supposed to, it's Kodam, but in terms of the quality of the meat, they're really Shkulin Kecha, they're really exactly the same. Ravina Amar Afilu Mikronami Lokar. Forget about that he didn't learn Mishnayis. He didn't even know Psukim. Dichsiv Im Keves Im Eiz. Ibai Keves Laisi, Ibai Eiz Laisi. You want to bring Keves by the Karbon Shlam. You want to bring Eiz, but there's no preference one or the other. They're Shneim, Shavim, they're both the same. So not only was he Mevazek Katshe Shemaim, he didn't even know the answer, how to answer the question properly. Hadron Lach Makam Shenagu. That's the end of what they call Pesach Rishon, the first half of Meseches Pesachim, and the second half is all about the Karbon Pesach, all of the dinim of the Karbon Pesach. By Hashem, we begin tomorrow.